This is a Defocus Media production.
Hello and welcome back to the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to business, entrepreneurship, and life. Thank you so much, everyone, for taking the time to join me here. And before we get started, do not forget, hit subscribe and throw down a comment, hit like, and do all of those fun things to help support the podcast. Leave a review, of course. And anytime along the way, please be sure to take a screenshot and throw it up on your Instagram story. Leave a comment. Let me know what you thought so I know that you found this valuable. And I think you will find it valuable. Of course, I'm always trying to bring on guests that can enrich our lives and educate us. And today I have a fantastic guest named Christina Labarca, who is the co-founder and a consultant at Giving Well, which is a consulting business that allows businesses who are looking to enhance their social corporate responsibility the opportunity to do so. And she's a recent graduate from Carleton University in Ottawa in the Masters in Philanthropy and Nonprofit Leadership program, which is pretty exciting because it's the only program of its type in Canada. So that's great. Please welcome Christina Labarca. Christina, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me today, Harbir. I'm really excited to have a chat with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really my pleasure. Now, just to kind of set the stage a little bit, you know, my audience might be wondering why this discussion around philanthropy is happening, but it's something that's been pretty core to my life and my business in the last handful of years. For anybody who's not aware, I had a few years ago started an online eyewear brand called Oxford & Kin, and the central kind of focus of that brand was giving back and developing a corporate social responsibility, you know, this sort of one-for-one model. Every pair of glasses you buy, we give back to somebody in need. And so it's really been important to me, and I've been reading lots of books on it, educating myself on it, and you know, I came across your business partner, Sharon Davis, who really helped me learn a lot more about it. And through her, of course, I've met you. So for me, it's been really important, but I think it's truly important for the average person, the average business owner to really understand the benefit of philanthropy and how to approach it. And I think there's no better person than yourself to talk about that. Before we get into that, if you could give us a little intro yourself, you know, what you do, who you are, and we'll go from there.
Sure. That sounds great. So, as you mentioned, I'm a co-founder and consultant at Giving Well. And prior to starting that business, I spent about two decades in the educational sector. And so I've always been interested in finding ways to educate people, to help them expand their thinking. And through the course of that experience, I sort of have always been interested in finding ways to give back. And so that was always something that I did sort of off the side of my plate, so to speak. Mm. And then finally, about 5 years ago, I decided to actually shift my career into an area where I could use my educational background, but also find ways to help other people to give back in meaningful ways. And so Giving Well kind of came about when we discovered a niche in the market where smaller and medium-sized businesses were interested in corporate social responsibility and giving back to their community. And they maybe were doing it like I was in my former life, off the side of their desk. It might have been somebody's job to decide at the end of every calendar year who would get the donation for that year. But it really wasn't integrated into their business. And then, you know, we saw companies like TELUS and larger scale companies doing things on a much bigger scale and seeing smaller businesses struggling to find a way to do more without having the resources to do it quite at that scale. Mm. And so came along Giving Well, and we've been able to help individuals as well as small and medium-sized businesses and finding ways to have an authentic giving program in their workplace, or even for individuals just to help them find ways to give back that benefit themselves and the community. And in the case of a business, their businesses as well. And so that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, that's a great business idea. I feel like a win. I feel like there's three wins in there somehow. You know, it's giving back, but it's genuinely giving back, not in like the like, oh, who am I going to just shovel this money off to, or just to kind of like, you know, make us look good. It's actually like integrating and helping people really get connected to it in a really good way. That's great. What sort of was there anything otherwise entrepreneurial wise in your journey? And have you always been sort of entrepreneurial, or was this the first foray into starting your own business?
It was officially the first foray, but I think when you talk about being an entrepreneur, I think there are certain characteristics that come with that that are somewhat ingrained, I think, in most entrepreneurs. And mm-hmm. for me, I think it was always, I was always looking for better ways to do things, doing it faster, doing it more efficiently, doing something that would enhance the workplace that I was in. And so I think I always had that mindset of, you know, trying to find an opportunity where I could help people and to make things easier and to make them better. Mm. And I came from a family of entrepreneurs. Both my parents are entrepreneurs. My brother's an entrepreneur. Oh, my uncles, pretty much everybody that surrounded me had their own business and had that entrepreneurial mindset. So I think it was very natural, and it was really just a culmination of timing, just that right moment in my life where I was ready to pivot and move out of a sector that I'd been in for a very long time, but to take those skill sets and transfer them into something where I could really make an impact and really make a difference.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think there's, you know, sometimes people will ask, like, are entrepreneurs born or made, you know, kind of thing. And it's probably some combination of both. But I find that most of them do have, like you said, this sort of spirit. There's something about in their DNA, a little bit about that. And of course, having that ingrained in your family and stuff definitely gives you that nudge. Whereas there's plenty of people it's not good or bad, but there's plenty of people who just don't have that feeling of going out there and really testing the limits. So let's talk about philanthropy. I mean, that's really the purpose of this conversation. There's so much, I feel like, maybe misinformation or misunderstanding around philanthropy. I'd love to clear up some of those things. First of all, there's one distinction I'd love if you could share with us, and that's charity versus philanthropy, because I find that those two words will often get mixed up. So if you could kind of distinguish those two for us, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. That's actually one of the workshops that we offer and really enjoy doing. And I think you're right. I think there is often a misunderstanding of charity and philanthropy. In some cases, people use them in similar contexts. And then I think in others, there's kind of a concept that the level of giving determines, you know, whether you're doing charity or philanthropy. So people will say, for example, you know, I'm not Bill Gates, so I can't be a philanthropist. And so they sort of tie this value of money to that terminology. But I look at it very differently in terms of charity and philanthropy. And both are important and both are necessary, I think, especially in this context, in this time. But typically speaking, charity is more of a short-term fix, whereas philanthropy tends to be looking more for a long-term solution to something. When you think of charities, you often think of things like social services that are provided, whereas philanthropy might be more focused on social change. Mm. And then you can also kind of consider that charity typically is a little bit more reactive and philanthropy is often more proactive. And so to sort of put it in a nutshell, you know, if you offer somebody who's hungry a sandwich, that would be an act of charity. If you take the time to investigate and find out maybe why that person is hungry, that's moving more towards the thought process of philanthropy. So for me, it's more about a mindset than it really is about a level of giving or an actual act. It's really how you are thinking about the issues that you see.
Yeah, that's sort of a give a man a fish versus teach a man to fish type of concept, I feel like. So that's a really good distinction to make. And I do feel like there is, for whatever reason, I'm not sure why it came about, but that feeling of philanthropy sounds like a much bigger thing that very wealthy people do. But it's not, as you said. So any suggestions then, you know, how would an individual, and then also we'll talk about companies or corporations, how would they go about exploring good ways to become philanthropic, to look for the right places to make the kind of change that you're talking about?
Yeah. So, you know, this is, there's so many things that go into these conversations. And part of why I love the work that I do is everybody's situation and point of view is so unique, and you learn a lot by going through this process with people and discovering sort of where their passion is and how they want to make an impact in the world. But there's a few things that, you know, we normally do with businesses or with individuals. Often we just start by conversations of, you know, what is it that really moves you? What is something that you're really passionate about that you would like to see change? And, you know, people will talk about things like climate change and food security and things like that. And again, like you said, the concept of philanthropy often for people seems too big. They seem to look at it and say, well, you know, I can't really make an impact. But again, I really believe it's about the mindset of thinking, you know, that you can make an impact. And so first discovering what that passion is and really, you know, narrowing it down. Sometimes that's the hardest part, is people say, oh, well, you know, I care about children and pets and health and environment. And so then you really need to sort of help people kind of narrow it down. Then the second thing I really encourage people to do is talk to your friends, talk to your family, talk to your colleagues. You know, talk to people about what they're passionate about. And particularly if you know people that are connected to foundations, or, you know, they are people that you see often connected with certain causes, it also helps you to kind of understand and really focus your own goals and what it is that you're trying to do. And then the third step is really research. Research is so important. And we talk about, you know, your giving portfolio as being very similar to your investment portfolio. Mm. I mean, you know, most people wouldn't go through a random list and then pick a place to put their investments.
I hope not.
It's the same. It's the same thing with their giving portfolio. You know, you really want to research different charities, and there's lots of tools out there that you can use. There's things like Charity Navigator, Charity Intelligence. Those are platforms where you can see ratings of charities. I always caution people, though, to be really careful with those ratings. They're just one way of kind of identifying and talking about a charity. I think the best thing to do, if you can, is connect directly with a charity or a nonprofit that you're interested in. So see if you can volunteer, see if you can go there and understand better what their kind of day-to-day programming is like. See if you can perhaps be a board member. The more that you understand about the organizations that you're supporting, I think the more you feel that you're really making a difference and really making an impact. Yeah. So that's a really key thing. And then I think the last thing is something that we advise to businesses, but I also advise to individuals, and that is sort of build yourself out a giving calendar. And I do this at the beginning of every year. I sit down and, you know, I have my select charities, and I look at, you know, different ways that I want to connect with them throughout the year. And it doesn't always have to be financial. And I think that's one of the big myths about giving, is people often feel like, I don't have anything to give. I don't have any money. But it doesn't always have to be that. There's lots of ways to give to charities that's equally as valuable as monetary donations. And that is often your time or your expertise. Those kind of things are extremely valuable to a nonprofit. So, you know, if you know how to do bookkeeping, or you know how to create a social media platform, or, you know, you even just have a few hours every week that you can give your time to an organization, that can benefit them a lot. And also gifts in kind. So if you have a product, and you know, you have excess product, and you can give that to an organization, that's another way that you can give back. And so when we work with companies, we work together with them, and we build out a giving calendar, which really is just a way to connect with your nonprofit partner multiple times throughout the year, so that it's not just once a year in December when you push the donate button, but that you're really building a partnership. And that's what we're really, what we really try to promote, is that partnership between a nonprofit and a business, or a nonprofit and an individual in some cases as well.
Those are all really, really important things. And I really like the giving calendar as well. Because it is usually at the end of the year where we're all thinking, okay, how can I give back, or how can I help somebody in need? But people need help all around, all year round. All these charities and organizations need support year round. So it's really important that we, I don't know whether it's quarterly or monthly or whatever you do, but it's good to have that. And having it on your calendar, right? There's something that I remember reading, like, if it's not on your calendar, you're not doing it, right? So just make sure it's on your calendar so you can see it and that you remember to do it. Mm-hmm. One thing you mentioned in there, something I definitely want to talk about, is some of the myths around giving and philanthropy. You mentioned one of them was that, you know, you don't have to just give money, you can give your time. But are there other myths that you find that are common around this topic? And please share if you can.
Sure. Yeah. Another popular workshop that we run, debunking the myths. There's quite a few. And for sure, the first one is, you know, I can't make a difference. I think a lot of people feel, you know, I can't make a difference. I can't make an impact. And so that's obviously not true and not the case. And even the smallest donation can have an impact. And, you know, oftentimes it's more about the commitment to it. And, you know, I've had experiences, for example, where we've had businesses that from day one, they have no revenue yet. They have nothing coming in the door. But that from day one, they make a commitment to an organization and they say, this is my charity partner and this is who I'm going to support. And so, you know, when you don't have money, perhaps you have time. When you don't have time, you might have the money. It tends to often be that way. So it's really just about making that commitment. And part of it, like we talked about right at the beginning, is there has to be authenticity behind it. It can't be kind of that greenwashing type of scenario where we say, you know, I'm doing good things for the environment, I'm doing good things for my community, but there is no follow through. And so I really think in some ways that organizations that commit to their giving and commit to their partnerships right from the outset are ones who are doing it really authentically, because they maybe don't have a lot yet. But we've seen examples of where companies over the years are able to give significant amounts and significant time and resources and all those things to their charitable partners. And that's what really makes the difference, is, you know, as a charity, the hardest thing is to never know what monies you have, what you have coming in the door. And so when somebody makes a commitment and says, okay, here is my giving calendar for the year, and here's what I'm going to be able to do, as a nonprofit, it really helps them to be able to then plan and to make decisions. So the number one thing is people who say, I can't make a difference, I can't do anything. And yes, 100% you can. I think the second one is one that became quite talked about through a TED Talk that Dan Pelota did, which was called "The Way We Think About Charity Is Dead Wrong." Mm-hmm. And in that TED Talk, he basically discussed the issue of overhead costs. And so some of the resources that I mentioned, the Charity Navigator, the Charity Intelligence, their rating agencies, and they look at all these different things that a charity or a nonprofit does. And one of them is how much money they spend on overhead. And so somewhere at some point, somebody set an arbitrary amount and said, you know, charities shouldn't spend more than 10% on their overhead costs. And people started to believe that and look at that as a marker. And they would look at charities that were spending more than 10%, 15%. And they would say, well, I'm not going to donate money to them because clearly they're spending too much money on overhead. And unfortunately, it perpetuated this sort of stereotype of, you know, that a charity, people working in a charity shouldn't get paid, you know, a fair wage. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have proper working conditions because they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And I think the reality is that I don't think anyone deserves to not work in an environment where they have a fair pay or where they have the ability to turn the lights on in their work environment. And I think we can all say that, you know, our environment that we work in is really important to us being able to do the best job that we can. And so, you know, over the years, that has been a big myth that the charitable sector has been trying to dispel and trying to help people understand that that overhead isn't a number to look at. You really need to look at each charitable organization individually and say, you know, where is this money going and how is it benefiting? Because like with a business, you can't grow a business unless you invest in it. You know, you need more people. You can't have one person, mm-hmm. you know, that's expected to work 80 hours a week for 5 or 10 years of their life. That it's just not feasible. And so hopefully, you know, these kind of conversations start to help people think a little bit differently. And so it's really important to look at a charity from an individual perspective. So where are they in their growth? And if they're in a growth spurt, they may need to spend more money on overhead costs. And that's totally reasonable.
Yeah.
And then the third one, I think it's been a big challenge, especially with the media, is some people just don't trust the charitable sector. And so that's a big struggle because, you know, although we see these big scandals that come through the media, they're such a small percentage of the good work that is being done out there. And so I'm always really disappointed when I encounter people who are so hesitant, maybe because they've had a bad experience or maybe because they've watched things in the media and they just have sort of said, forget it. I'm not giving money. I'm not mm-hmm. giving it to anybody because I can't trust them. Mm-hmm. And so again, I think that comes back to one of the things that is so key for people with their giving portfolio, and that's the research. Mm-hmm. And I think you can start to gain trust by understanding and researching and learning as much as you can about an individual charity. And again, not blanketing them all together and saying they're all bad because right. one of them, you know, made yeah. a mistake or one of them did something. Not to negate that those are not, you know, horrible situations, but it doesn't mean that the entire sector yeah. Should be abandoned.
I like
and
the,
so
sorry, go on.
Yeah. So that's a big one for
yeah,
sure.
I was gonna say I do like the idea of the research. You know, I don't think I personally ever really thought of it that way. You know, I think of the organizations that I've heard of or maybe have just come across my you know, Path, you know, in iCare, there are a couple of organizations. And if multiple people have sort of vouched for it, I just assume it's good, you know, and being kind of lazy and not doing my own research. But it's so important if you really want to make a difference to research those organizations the same way you, like you said, research your investment. I think that's a really great way of putting it. And yeah, and those scandals, of course, they exist and they were obviously not, it was not great what happened in those scenarios, but they're sort of like shark attacks. Most things in the media, right? Like if it's in the media, that means it probably doesn't happen that often. and you don't want to paint everybody with the same brush for sure. But the idea of the overhead has been something that was discouraging to me. You know, I heard that certain large charitable organizations had huge overheads, and I, you know, forgive me if I'm misquoting numbers here, but like 70-80% overhead or even more potentially. And that makes you wonder, well, where's all that money going and why am I giving all this money? But one thing I you mentioned it yourself, you know, if a business is growing, if a business wants to succeed, they have to have the right people in place to make it succeed. You know, you want to have a CEO to be able to run everything the right way. And charitable organizations, if they want to have the large impact, some of these big organizations, they need to have the right people in place and they need to be able to hire those people who can run these massive machines, right? So once I learned that, I thought I've kind of got understood that a little bit more, but I can see how it's still discouraging for somebody who sees that overhead number and feeling like their money's just going to waste.
Yeah. And so my only suggestion to that would be ask, you know, you can ask those questions. And if a charity isn't willing to answer your questions, you probably don't want to be giving them your money anyway. But, you know, I think one of the areas that of ranking that these platforms use is transparency. And so charities have to be transparent. They have to post their annual reports. And you know, with a little bit of work, you can go on there, you can take a look at where the money is being spent. And oftentimes, you know, it's very well laid out in some of the charity's annual reports, and you can find all that information quite quickly. But my advice is always, before you make a judgment, ask those questions, because I think that's what often hinders that process for people, is if they're not asking the questions, then there's a judgment call that's made that may or may not be accurate. And so, you know, yeah, 70% overhead, that sounds like a lot to me too. Yeah. You know, I would certainly ask, you know, why the overhead is at that level, what's going on in the organization. And that's where I think, you know, the more that you can connect yourself with a charitable partner, the more that you really feel you understand where your money is going, how it's being used, and then the impact that it's having. Because really, that's what it comes down to for people who are making these donations, is it's really, really feeling connected to the change that's happening and the impact that's happening. Because if you're not doing it yourself, that's your tool, that's your vehicle to try to help make that change. And so I just think the more you can learn about it, the better, and the more you'll feel connected to the work that's being done, and the more forgiving you can be too, because like businesses, nonprofits or charities make mistakes sometimes. But it's important that they turn around and say, you know what, we invested in this and it didn't go well, and here's what we've learned from it. And I think some of the best charities are the ones that are willing to say, we made errors, but here's how we're rectifying it, and here's how we're going to do it better the next time, because nobody's perfect, sadly.
Well, you know, if we were perfect, I don't know how exciting our lives would be, but you know,
that's right.
No, you're right. But we do need to be a bit more forgiving in some of those instances for sure. So I'd like to change gears a little bit. This podcast is going to go live during what is Mental Health Week or Mental Health Awareness Week, first week of May. And there is, you've had a very significant incident in your life in the recent past that has kind of led you down, I think, a path that you did not expect to go down, which was in the realm of mental health. I feel like this discussion around mental health, I'm understanding more and more, is so important to just bring awareness to this topic in whatever capacity. You know, I think part of the problem, and I just speak for myself in this, I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush, but part of the problem is you think of mental health in a very small way, right? It's just this one small picture that you have of it. But really, it's a broad, broad topic, encapsulates so many different things and so many different people. First, you know, before we discuss more on that, I'd love for you to, if you wouldn't mind, share this experience that you had, because it was a very significant one that took me a little bit of time for me to wrap my head around. And then we'll talk about kind of the path that led you down. So this incident that happened in September 2020.
Yeah, sure. So in September, so 2020 has been a challenging year for everybody, no obviously. Yeah, in September, my husband and I were Sunday morning going and doing our grocery shopping. We have a family that includes 5 adult children. And so you can imagine what our grocery carts look like when we go shopping. Yeah. And we were coming out of the grocery store and I was randomly stabbed by a woman who was standing just outside the door. I didn't actually notice her. In fact, I was looking over my receipt, making sure that, you know, everything was accounted for. Yeah, just checking through my bills. And I suddenly felt a jab in my side. At the time, I didn't realize what had actually happened. I looked up, I saw the woman. She looked clearly distressed. I turned to my husband. I said, "That woman just hit me," because it felt as though she'd punched me, maybe like with a ring on her finger. There was a bit of a jab, but I didn't really realize what had happened. And suddenly she lunged at my husband with a knife and he sort of started to run through the parking lot. Again, still just reactive, I grabbed the shopping cart. I went over to our car. I saw my husband running, yelling, you know, call 911. And I thought, oh geez, I guess I better call 911. And I went to pull my phone out of my pocket and realized I was bleeding. And at that moment, you know, it sort of all kind of hit me. And so I called 911. And we suddenly had, you know, all the first responders come and to attend to us. Luckily, some staff came out from the security from the store and they were able to capture the woman before she was able to hurt anybody else significantly. And so obviously, you know, completely unexpected. And this experience, it was very strange in some ways, in the sense of how I processed it. And I remember that, you know, shortly after, it was on the news and people started calling and texting and sending messages and, "Are you okay?" And, you know, I kept saying, "Yeah, I'm fine." Luckily, I had no internal injuries. But clearly people were concerned about me, you know, with my mental health. And so I remember I called my counselor at the end of the week and had a phone appointment with her. And I said to her, "You know, this is really strange." I said, "You know, this is what happened to me." And I said, "And I feel surprisingly okay about the situation." And so, you know, she said something to me that was really profound. And she said, "You know, you are a person who's always taking care of your mental health." And so all my life, I've been a mental health advocate for myself and for my family and my close friends. I believe that mental health is something that we should try to be proactive and not reactive with. And so I've always had a counselor. I've always had somebody that I can go and see. And I realize that that is a privilege, and not everyone has access to that. But it's something that I believe in should be part of our medical system. And so my counselor said to me, "You know, it's similar to when you exercise and you build up your strength and your muscles. And then if you get injured, typically your recovery is going to be a lot quicker because you're already physically healthy." And she said, "And you're the same way, but with your mental health. And because you take care of your mental health and that's something that you believe in," she said, "you know, it's not surprising that this hasn't impacted you the same way it might impact somebody else." And so I think that sort of was a bit of a light bulb moment for me. It made me realize that, you know, this course of action that I've always sort of believed in really has a lot of value, maybe more so than I even realized. Yeah. And then I think the second thing was it made me also aware of just the fact that there are so many people, especially during COVID, that have been, you know, suffering with their mental health. And this woman, this was clearly a cry for help. She was not, she didn't know me. She had no reason to pick me. It was a random incident, and it was her at her breaking point. And honestly, you know, I felt so much pain for her in the days following the incident, because, you know, I was able to come home to my family and my house and you know, go and see my counselor and get all this attention and help and things that I needed. And I realized that this woman clearly didn't have access to those same kind of resources. And so that sort of led me onto a little bit of a new path, just in the sense of, you know, I felt like as a result of this, I wanted to do more to help support mental health initiatives and to raise more awareness. I think there's still a lot of stigma around mental health, and I think that's really unfortunate. But I don't think that, I think that one of the things COVID has done has really forced us to acknowledge that this has been a difficult time, and it's been more difficult for some people than for others, and that we don't have enough resources there for everybody that needs them. And if the resources are there, sometimes they're just so hard to find. And, you know, in the aftermath of this incident, I spoke to friends and colleagues and neighbors and people who were willing to share with me their own experiences of struggling to find the support that they needed. And so I just realized that I needed to do something else. Mm-hmm. And I started looking for opportunities where I could support mental health. And so recently I connected with the Canadian Mental Health Association, the Vancouver Fraser branch. And I've been doing some work with their board and the fundraising team there. And I'm just, you know, looking forward to having more opportunities to talk about my experience and to help people to find ways to ensure that they get the support that they need.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. First of all, that to go through that and how shocking and upsetting potentially that incident could have been and probably would have been for so many people. But then for you to turn that around and make it into a positive, and for you to look at, instead of, you know, woe is me, to look at the other person and where they're coming from and what might have caused them to do such a thing, and to feel pain for that person versus just for yourself. And then to go a step further and then look at how you can make a change. Pretty incredible. And now we've learned about you and where you come from and your, you know, your personality from before, you know, giving well. It kind of makes sense that you would have that, because you've always thought about other people and how to help other people. But really, really incredible. And, you know, I know that you went in on to the news and multiple media outlets to share this story. And when you did so, it wasn't like, look at me, I got stabbed. It was, you know, we need to do something about this, this crisis that we have, this mental health crisis. So really incredible. And thank you for being such a strong person and so resilient. And really, I think that's going to be something that's going to encourage others, you know, to come forward, to either lend a hand or share their story a little bit more to, you know, bring more awareness, which is ultimately, I think, what really needs to be done right now, education and awareness. So any other thoughts you'd like to share, whether on the mental health aspect or the philanthropy aspect, before we kind of get towards closing up the interview?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we sort of covered the spectrum of things today. And all I can sort of add, I think, on the topic of mental health, because I know that's sort of how you and I have connected as well, is that I really, you know, like you said, I really encourage people to, you know, share their stories and to talk to people and to look for resources and to try to get the support they need. And COVID has been such a game changer for so many people. I think people that were sort of just kind of staying afloat, you know, in some cases this might have pushed people really to the edge. And I really believe that, you know, with this incident that I went through, that that's what happened to that woman. But I think as a community, you know, we can support each other. We can help our friends or our colleagues to find resources to help support them. And I love that you gave me the opportunity to have this conversation, because I really believe that, you know, sometimes the biggest inhibitor we still have is stigma around talking about mental health struggles. And we need to change that. We need to change that for the betterment of everybody. And I talk about this with my kids, because I don't want my kids to grow up with the same kind of stigma that that maybe my generation did, or the generations before that. And so I love when my kids can talk about mental health and struggles, and that they can tap into resources that are available. And so I think, you know, all of us kind of coming together through this shared experience of the COVID pandemic, we have to find the bright side. We have to find the positive that comes out of it. And I really hope that this spotlight on mental health is one that will kind of stick with us as we move into a post-pandemic phase.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for sharing that. With every interview that I do, I have two final questions that I ask every guest. So I'd like to ask you those, and I didn't prepare you for these.
Surprise!
You know, it's funny. I had somebody ask me these questions in the last podcast, and I was like, even though I asked them to everybody, even I was like a deer in the headlights. But they're not challenging questions. They're simply kind of asking you to reflect a little bit on your life. So the first question is, if we could step in a time machine and go back to it, particular time in your life that you were perhaps struggling. You can share the moment if you'd like, but more importantly, I'd like you to share, what advice would you give to yourself at that time?
Wow. Yeah, I think I would go and get the support I needed sooner. I think, you know, prior to this experience, you know, I've been through other things in my life that were somewhat traumatic. And, you know, I think it took me a long time to maybe feel the confidence or the ability to go out and get the help that I needed for that. And I remember when I first did, and the feeling that I had every time I went into the counselor's office, and I felt like I unloaded something with them. And so, you know, the advice I have for myself and for anybody else is just take that first step. You just have to take that first step. And, you know, it might be hard. I kind of always say it's sort of like going to the dentist. You don't really want to go to the dentist, but, you know, when you come out of the dentist, you feel good. Your teeth are clean. Your breath is fresh. You know, nobody really wants to go into the counseling office, but when you come out of it, you maybe feel a little bit lighter and a little bit better.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent advice. And thanks for putting that kind of lighthearted spin on it. That helps. The final question then is, everything that you've achieved so far in your life, whether it's personal or professional, how much of it would you say is due to luck, and how much is due to hard work?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Well, so I'm going to say luck for a lot of it, because I think the one thing, and maybe the reason why I've kind of gone the path I've always gone down, is I realized very early on in my life, when I started to travel, in my 20s, I traveled extensively for actually 7 years. I traveled to 70 different countries.
70?
70 countries. Wow. In 7 years. I know, it sounds crazy even saying it. The thing I realized through that was that because I was born in Canada, I had advantages that I never earned. And, you know, when you go to other countries and you see some of the living conditions and some of the disadvantages that people start with, I really, truly feel that I was born in a privileged place. And by sure luck of where I was born, I have a lot of advantages that other people don't have. And I think that's been a primary reason why giving back for me has always been so important. So definitely, I'm not going to say the hard work doesn't fall in there. Yeah. But, you know, you don't start out on an even playing field, I don't think. Mm. I think some people, you know, I feel very lucky to be where I am because of the sheer fact that I was born here and had some privileges from that. So
That's an excellent answer. Thank you. And the fact that you have the experience of traveling to so many different countries as your kind of part of your explanation, I think that gives you puts a lot of weight to your explanation and your answer. I think that's one of the things that's most enriching, educating, and perhaps humbling things you can do is to travel to a lot of different countries to see the way people come up and the opportunities or lack of opportunities they have. Really makes you appreciate what we have and be grateful for it. So that's really cool. Really great.
Absolutely.
Last thing I just want to ask you quickly is, how can people get in touch with you?
Sure. So the website is www.givingwell.ca. That has our link to our Twitter and our Facebook and our LinkedIn accounts. So you can find me through Giving Well, info@givingwell.ca. So any of those.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, Christina, for coming on and sharing so many incredible insights, both into philanthropy, into mental health, and everything else. Really, really appreciated it. I'm sure everybody who's listening and watching will have taken so much away from this. And all of you who are listening and watching, thank you so much for tuning in. Whether you're on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, make sure you hit subscribe, hit like, leave a comment, leave a review, all the good stuff. Take a screenshot, put it on your Instagram story. You know the drill. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll be back with another episode very, very soon. Take care, guys.